Section 2. What happened to the body? So the canonical Acts is not really to be trusted any more than any of the other apocryphal Acts that Christians produced. But let's at least suppose that its author started with some sort of bare outline of what happened in the early years of the spread of Christianity, and maybe even some actual historical sources or semi-historical sources, perhaps something with a historical core embellished with legends and tall tales, even if he didn't use them very much. At the very least, let's assume such materials and information were known to him, even if he didn't use them at all. Surely even then he would take them into account and be inspired by their content when constructing his own story of what happens. Whether we grant such assumptions or not, Luke obviously constructed tales affirming the historicity of Jesus, as well as the physical resurrection of his corpse, which left behind a conspicuously empty tomb, got touched by the disciples, slept and dined with them during a secret 40-day closed-door conference, and then flew off into outer space before their very eyes. Just read Luke 24 and Acts 1. This is all obvious nonsense. Notably, no witnesses are claimed for any of this but fanatical followers. No one else is reported to have verified any of it. Instead, the public history of the Christian mission begins only in Acts 2, which depicts the first time Christians publicly announced their gospel. But something very strange happens at that point. In Acts' history of the movement, from the movement the flock first goes public, in the very city of Jerusalem itself, at no point in the story, anywhere in all subsequent 27 chapters spanning 3 decades of history, do either the Romans or the Jews ever show any knowledge of there being a missing body. Nor do they ever take any action to investigate what could only be to them a crime of tomb robbery and desecration of the dead, both severe death penalty offenses, or worse. The Gospel of Matthew even claims the Jewish authorities accused the Christians of such crimes before Pilate himself. Just look at Matthew 27, verses 62 to 66, Matthew 28, verses 4, and verses 11 to 15. Although that is certainly fiction, as I have argued elsewhere, external and internal evidence confirms Matthew's story as a poetic and apologetic fabrication, it does reflect what could not fail to have happened if anybody had actually gone missing. Since Christians were supposedly capitalizing on this fact, that is, a missing body as evidence of a risen Jesus, they would be the first suspects, or at least the second, if, as the Gospels claim, Joseph of Arimathea was really the last person known to have had custody of the body. In that case, he would be the first man hauled in for questioning. Yet, he vanishes completely from this, the earliest, history of the church, as if no one knew anything about him, or he didn't exist at all. Yet, unless he was found and confessed to getting rid of the body, the Christians would be next in the dock. And yet, though Christians would certainly be suspects in a capital crime of grave robbery, and though Acts records case after case of them being interrogated at trial before both Jews and Romans on other offenses, for example, Acts 4, 5, 6, 7, 18, 17, 23, 24, 25, 26, etc., never once in this entire history of the church are they ever suspected of or questioned about grave robbery. It's as if there was no missing body to investigate, no empty tomb known to the authorities, which means the Christians can't really have been pointing to one. If they had, they would have been questioned about it and possibly convicted for it, innocent or not. Yet Acts shows there were no disputes at all regarding what happened to the body, not even false accusations of theft, or even questions or expressions of amazement. The Romans, meanwhile, would have had an even more urgent worry than body snatching. The Christians were supposedly preaching that Jesus, even if with supernatural aid, had escaped his execution, was seen rallying his followers, and then disappeared. Pilate and the Sanhedrin would not likely believe claims of his resurrection or ascension, and there is no evidence they did. But if the tomb was empty, and Christ's followers were reporting that he had continued preaching to them and was still at large, Pilate would be compelled to haul every Christian in and interrogate every possible witness in a massive manhunt for what could only be, in his mind, an escaped convict, not only guilty of treason against Rome for claiming to be God and king, as all the Gospels allege, but now also guilty of escaping justice. And the Sanhedrin would feel the equally compelling need to finish what they had evidently failed to accomplish the first time, finding and killing Jesus. Yet none of this happens. No one asks where Jesus is hiding or who aided him. No one is at all concerned that there may be an escaped convict, pretender to the throne, thwarter of Roman law and judgment, dire threat to Jewish authority, alive and well somewhere, and still giving orders to his followers. Why would no one care that the Christians were claiming they took him in, hid him from the authorities, and fed him after his escape from justice, especially according to Acts 1, unless, in fact, they weren't claiming any such thing? This is enough to confirm Acts' account of events is a fabrication, and a rather unrealistic one at that. Thus, either Acts deliberately suppresses the truth about what happened to the body and what was really being argued, said, and done about it, which eliminates Acts as being of any historical value, or there was no missing body and no one was claiming there was. The fact that Acts fails to mention any debate or investigation or discussion about any tomb being empty or any body being missing, it never even occurs as an argument or a defense in any of the trials or debates that Acts records, for instance, or likewise about an executed convict being reported alive and well, would agree with the theory that the original Christians were in fact preaching that Jesus rose in an entirely new body, not the old one he discarded and left behind in the grave. As Paul wrote, the body that dies, quote, is not the body that is to come, end quote, but rather the buried body is left to be destroyed, while a superior replacement body is already stored up in heaven waiting for us, as we see in 1 Corinthians 15, 35-50, and 2 Corinthians 5, verses 1-4. Note that even Peter's street sermon in Acts 2, which references David's tomb, fails to make any appeal to the actual emptiness of Jesus' tomb. Nor does anyone present affirm its emptiness or challenge it. It simply doesn't even come up. So Acts' account could perhaps be rescued on minimal historicity. A real historical Jesus could still have been in his grave, which would not really have been a private grave owned by Joseph, but the graveyard owned by the court for the burial of convicted criminals. And Acts' source materials could, for that reason, lack any mention of inquests or disputes over the missing body, because there wasn't one. Of course, these omissions could instead be because the author of Acts, in fabricating his story, simply didn't think about having the authorities or even the evangelists behave realistically. But if there was no missing body, that could well be why the claims of his resurrection are dismissed as mere madness, as in Acts 26, verse 24, involving no possible criminal charge of any kind under Roman law, as we're told was repeatedly said, for example, Acts 18, verses 12 to 17, Acts 23, verses 26 to 35, and so on. Otherwise, the crime of either robbing graves or aiding and abetting an escaped felon and royal pretender would certainly have been obvious grounds for an inquest or trial, yet neither occurs. Thus, if Acts records any truth about history of the first church, its narrative all but entails there was no empty tomb, the body of Jesus was not missing, and that the earliest Christians, including Paul, were instead preaching a resurrection by transfer to a new body, now in heaven, a fact known only by private revelations and interpretations of Scripture, which would be dismissed by Roman and Jewish authorities alike as nothing but vain superstition at best, idle madness at worst. So evidently this detail is a wash. Both historicists and mythicists can adduce equally plausible explanations of it, though only by assuming the first Christians were not preaching an empty tomb. But there is something even stranger missing from Acts.